AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. As you know, we serve the southeastern Pennsylvania area, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware. And if you live in those areas, I encourage you to go to your telephone and invite a family member or friend to tune in here on 860. If you're outside the area, all you have to do is go to the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com, log in, and click on the Listen Live link. As you know, we have been doing a tremendous amount of work over the years promoting our agendas. In fact, 2018, we have been encouraging America's businesses to highlight on their labels and packaging that their items are made and assembled in America. And ladies and gentlemen, I think we have hit a historical high. Just wanted to mention also that today, after the broadcast, our engineer, Henry Chaplinsky, will send out a copy of it to all of our email supporters, as well as post it on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com on the Listen Anytime link. I want to compliment our panel members, Mark Andel, founder of the American Made Store, also Larkin Connolly, national small business advocate, Rich Logis, principal of RJL Technology Integration, our engineer, Henry Chaplinsky. I'm Michael Blihash, always happy to be with you. Thank you for letting me know that you tune in during our very many events that we speak of throughout this radio broadcast. Well, today, ladies and gentlemen, I'm very pleased that we're going to have a 15-minute interview with a very well-known young gentleman from Philadelphia. I'm very proud to welcome Congressman Brendan Boyle to our broadcast today. Many of you know him. He's been in the House of Representatives in the state of Pennsylvania and now serves in the 13th Congressional District of the state. And back in February, the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania realigned the district map of the Pennsylvania congressional districts, and now Congressman Boyle, who's from the Northeast Philadelphia, is going to be running for re-election in the second congressional district. Also, I want to mention with the new districts, he is going to have all of the river wards and all of the Northeast Philadelphia area where many of our listeners live. And by the way, for the record, Congressman Boyle is now my new congressman. So you can only imagine how many calls he's going to receive from me. One of the big things that I like about the congressman is that he's a promoter of American made, and that's very important. Talking about careers, technology, all of that, trying to make sure that people are ready to go in the 21st century. And I'm pleased to say also that the congressman has introduced the Buy American Made Act, Buy American 2.0 Act. He's introduced that, and what that will do is require that all federally funded infrastructure projects use materials made in the USA. Well, Congressman Boyle, I know that you're here with us for a short time, but I wanted you to introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about the new district situation and exactly where you're going to be, and also let us know about your efforts to support the Buy American Made campaign. Congressman Boyle.
Well, it's great to be with you, and thank you for having me. And I'm glad that you'll be now a constituent. Essentially, what the courts did was they pretty much chopped Philadelphia into two different congressional districts. And so my congressional district is all of Northeast Philadelphia, all along the river, as far south as Race Street, so essentially a little south of the Ben Franklin Bridge, also parts of North Philadelphia as well, that's east of Broad Street. So if you look at a map of Philadelphia, the entire Northeast, North Philadelphia east of Broad Street, and then the entire river area as far south as kind of the old city section of the city. So I'm really happy with what the court did. As a guy who was born and raised in Philadelphia and who lives there, I grew up in the Olney section of the city, have lived in far northeast Philadelphia for the last dozen years or so, about last 15 years. And, you know, it's just, it's an honor for me to represent where I was born and raised in Congress and fight for the kind of working families that I grew up in. You know, when I was growing up in our neighborhood, certainly there no one was rich. And fortunately, very few people were poor. Everyone was hardworking, trying to get by, raise their kids, provide a better life for them. And so in terms of my public service, it's really been to look out for those kind of families.
And you know, Congressman, our broadcast for the last 8 years has been directed mainly to see what we can do to motivate all of the schools to put in the training programs and do things that are going to get the kids motivated. There's a lot of industries that want to come to America, but many of them are not able to find the boys and girls with hands-on experience that are needed to have those industries here. And this has been a big thing in the last year or so. We've been really promoting bringing back the industries, bringing back competition. And so I'm really interested to hear about your Buy American Made bill. Let me know a little bit about that.
Yeah, so you described it pretty well. It's called the Buy America 2.0 Act. And the point of it is very simple, that if we're going to have a federally funded, taxpayer-funded infrastructure project, we need to make sure 100% of those materials are American-made. Why in the world would we have a taxpayer-funded road or bridge that is using steel from China or Vietnam when we have domestic industries right here that we need to support? You know, I'm a big supporter of spending on infrastructure. We desperately need it. It has been neglected for decades now. And so if and when we do have that big bill on infrastructure, I want to make sure that we're buying American. And so it's something that I feel very strongly about. Introduced the legislation and am continuing to push it.
You know, Congressman, I wanted to ask you, how has the reaction been to that bill that you introduced from your fellow congressional panel people?
Well, I have a lot of co-sponsors on the Democratic side of the aisle and a couple Republicans, although just recently I tried to get a vote on it, and it was blocked by Paul Ryan and by the Republican leadership here in the House. So, you know, unfortunately, we have some people who talk a good game when it comes to buying American and supporting American workers. But then when it actually comes to passing bills that would, you know, put our money where our mouth is, unfortunately, there are a lot of folks, especially on the other side of the aisle, who just won't step up and vote for those kind of measures. And it's very disappointing to me, but I'm going to continue working for it because I do believe that we are going to have a big infrastructure bill over the next 12 months. So I'm not going to quit on the Buy America Act. I think that, you know, when we see what's happening to the state of American workers, and what has been happening the last 10 and 20 years, economic statistics show that most of the wealth gains the last 10, 20 years have gone to the very rich. The top 1%, in fact, the top 0.1%. And I don't have anything against them personally, but I just want to make sure that workers that are in Northeast Philadelphia, that are in North Philadelphia, that are in the river wards, that are actually producing the labor in this country, that they are able to benefit from those wealth gains. And it's not just going to a bunch of millionaires and billionaires on Wall Street. So that's why provisions like the Buy America Act are important. That's why other provisions in our tax code and changes that we can make to make sure that we reward hard work and that we reward labor.
You know, Congressman, I agree 1,000% with that. And even when you go shopping, it's really disappointing to see how many of the products, you look at the labels, and the labels are from everywhere in the kitchen sink but America. I think it's a bad example for our young people to go out shopping and find out everything is made somewhere else. Everything that they're wearing, their items for school, so many of the things in the house are made. Just take a look at the cell phones, the televisions and all. You remember when Philadelphia was known for many industries. And in the last 20 years, so many of these those industries were marched out of this country over the world. And now it's time for everybody to work. I want to see big business. I want to see all the elected officials. And mostly, I want to see the American people come forward and support every effort possible to make American made the number one issue in this country.
Yeah, it's very important to me that we make it in America. And, you know, there's been this kind of official line that has been put out there the last 25, 30 years that, well, you know, we're a wealthy country, and therefore we can't make goods here. It has to be in lower-income countries. You know, that's nonsense. And a great example is Germany. Germany is the second wealthiest country on Earth. Manufacturing is almost 25% of their economy. For the United States, it's in the low single digit. We're in the single digit. So this was part of a conscious decision that was made largely in Washington to try to reward those companies that import and sell goods and really devalue making things in this country. And we can turn that around. I'm very confident of that. And I think that you see more of a push in Philadelphia and parts of Pennsylvania, but really a lot of the country, you see more of a push saying, hey, wait a minute, you know, why don't we have policies that reward American-made goods instead of actually having policies that reward those that make it overseas and ship it here? You know, I stood outside on Roosevelt Boulevard a few years ago when Nabisco, which had been in Northeast Philadelphia for many decades, 70, 80 years, when they decided to close their plant because they were building in Monterrey, Mexico, and sending those 325 jobs down there. I stood up at that press conference and I showed ways in which our tax code actually rewards companies for outsourcing.
Absolutely.
I introduced a bill called the Patriot Employer Act. Sherrod Brown is the sponsor in the Senate. I'm the sponsor in the House, along with another colleague who's from Chicago, Jan Schakowsky. We're pushing a change to our tax code called the Patriot Employer Act that would punish companies that outsource and instead would reward those companies based on the number of high-paying jobs they produce in the United States. So there are things that we can do to turn this around and actually help increase American jobs and good-paying American jobs. But we need to make sure that we elect folks who support those policies.
You know, Congressman, you're talking a very important issue about things coming in from other countries, and people think that it's so much cheaper. I mentioned this many times during the broadcast. People come in to our exhibit place in Center City, and they say, you know, I don't like the fact that all of the stuff coming from China, these are Chinese people coming in to tell us that they're here at Drexel University to do a conference. And they come in, they say, the tie you're wearing, which mine was made in Brooks Brothers, but the tie you're wearing, we sent over on the container for $2.13. I went to Macy's on Market Street, and it's selling for $39. Where is that money going?
Right.
You know, and this is where we have to start talking about these issues, because Americans want to work. No person should be in poverty in America. We have enough space. I mean, it's not like we're some compact country. We have a tremendous amount of area in America where we can open the most modern industries with robotics and whatever else is needed now. But we got to get to the point where at least 50% of everything made in America is featured on the shelves and also available around the world. Right now, we're sending big items around the world. but we're not sending small items, clothing, shoes, televisions.
Right.
They're sending everything to us. Now, I know you're on a time thing, but I want you to take a minute and just be introduced to two of our panel members with us today. Mark Andel, take a minute with our good Congressman Boyle.
Hello, Congressman Boyle. Mark Andel here. Music to my ears. Love what I'm hearing. Love what you're about. I own the Made in America stores. There's seven brick-and-mortar stores up in West New York, and we're up to 8,000 products made in our country and support 500 privately owned American businesses. So I'm everything about what you're about.
Oh, that is thank you, Mark, for doing that. That is outstanding. You made my day.
I started out of my father's garage. My parents were poor. I grew up. And then I opened Mark Small Engine, turned that into General Welding and Fabricating, a manufacturing division with four plants. Long story short, I had 70 employees, 18 family members, three guys I went to kindergarten with, and I had to lay off 40 of them in about 2008, 9, and 10. And out of that, I lost my two major accounts to China directly, $3.5 million accounts, and hit me really hard in 07, 08. And when you lay off your family members, things change. And that's where the Made in America store was born. I did it for country, soldier, American worker, and people that work with their hands. So I'm all about what you're about, and I'm glad to hear what you said and the way you said it, where you came from. My father grew up poor, and my mother was an orphan, and he worked at Ford Motor Company, Bethlehem Steel, two jobs to get us out of the city. His father worked at Nabisco, I think you mentioned, and I think his father made $75 a week in the 60s. But, blue-collar family, and we had a swimming pool and an extra car. He did good working with his hands. So that's what we're all about, and I compliment you, and God bless you on your movement, because I'm strongly behind you, help you in any way. Brian Higgins up here is great. His father was a bricklayer, Congressman, Senator Collins. I got a lot of friends up here that believe like you do. We're 100% made in America, and we've proved that people love it, but, boy, it's a 35-year mistake. We don't make nothing electronic or plugs in that I can sell at my store. And I tell people, we've been to the moon, but we can't build a toaster in the United States of America. Come on.
Right. You put it perfectly. And, unfortunately, I have to head off here to make a vote. But I look forward to continuing this conversation and being with you again. And, a big part of my public service has been making sure that we increase jobs for American workers and that we reward their hard work. And that's what I'm about. And as long as I'm fortunate enough to be in this position, we'll be continuing to fight for that. So thanks, guys.
Congressman, the very best. See you soon. Remember, always look for American made. Look at every label before you make a purchase. God bless.
Thank you.
Good luck, and hope for everything will go perfect on Election Day and from there on. My very best.
Thanks. From your lips to God's ears. All right. Take care, guys.
Well, Rich, we had we almost had you on, but I wanted you. But we'll get Congressman Boyle back. He's a person who's used to doing radio gigs, and he'll be very happy to say what's on his mind. That's what I like about Congressman Brendan Boyle. And I'm glad that the districts changed, because he'll now be in my area, and I'll be able to have more requests put upon him to help the community, which he's done a good job in the 13th, where he's been representing. How are you doing, Dr. Rich Loges?
Hey, Michael, good morning, and good morning to everybody, Mark, Larkin, Henry, our listeners. I'm a little disappointed, Michael, because Congressman Boyle would have been the first congressman I could have asked the following question to. I wanted to really ask him this question. Now, he correctly pointed out about millionaires, billionaires, and gazillionaires on Wall Street. That's absolutely correct, what he said. But what I want to know is, who is they? I hear about the millionaires and billionaires. Where are they, Michael? What do they do? Who are they? What are their political allegiances? See, that's what I want to really know.
Well, I think everybody wants to know that. There is a big controversial thing going on right now, Rich, where many of the people want to go out and vote for candidates, but they're not registered as Democrats or Republicans. They're registered as independents, which means now that 40% or plus 46% of the vote is taken away. The voters do not have the opportunity to go and vote because, take for instance, in Pennsylvania, it is not a right to vote type state, an open primary. I think that is something that we have to push because a lot of people say, I just feel like being an independent. I want to not have any allegiance. When somebody asks me, I want to say I'm an independent, which I understand. But we also have to have every voter have the opportunity to go out and vote. Do you agree with that?
Well, we're a closed state also, Michael, in Florida. And it's why I took what some might call a contradictory position, which is fair criticism. When you're in the business of politics, everything shouldn't be fair game, but how you vote is. So I got tired, Michael, of sitting on the sidelines as a registered what's called an NPA, no party affiliation, because we're a closed state. Now, we can debate whether or not we should be an open state, same for Pennsylvania, same for anywhere else. But as a registered independent, you can't vote in the primaries. You can do everything else except vote in the primaries. And so I decided that I did not want to sit on the sidelines. But that doesn't make me any less independent than the moment I first came on this show 5.5 years ago. And in my county, I'll just, for an example, where I live in Palm Beach County, there are more registered NPAs than there are registered Republicans. That's also true in Miami and Broward. Now, in Philly, there's probably 120% registered Democrat rate. You probably have more registered Democrats than people in the city, Larkin, but that's a different issue. So here where I am, Michael, I think that more and more voters over the course of the last many, many years, while there are Democrat super voters and there are Republican super voters, I think absolutely, Michael, that the voter mindset has very much evolved over the course of the last few decades to being much more independent-minded. And that's a big, big reason why our president got elected, because he may have ran on a party platform, but he really ran as an independent, and not just as an independent, but an independent who could win, unlike Ralph Nader or Ross Perot. So I like the fact, Michael, I like the fact that the voter mindset, in my opinion, has become.
But do you believe that it would be better if we allowed all registered voters to be able to vote in an open primary?
I can make a case for either or, though, Michael. And Larkin and me have talked about this on air before. You know, if we're whatever our opinions of the political parties aside, if a political party exists and wants only registered members of the party to be able to vote in that primary, I do see that argument. However, the flip side of this argument is that, especially if I'm the Republican Party, I want independence. So ultimately, Michael, if Florida became an open state, I would not object. I think it's better to have it than not to have it if we were an open state. So that way NPAs, Libertarians, Working Family Party, you know, Dog Walker Party, whatever party you want, if there's a candidate you like and you want to go vote for him or her, I won't object to that. I see both sides of the argument, but if we're open, I'm good with that. I would support that.
I see myself on election day, some people who are newly registered independents go to the polls and are stymied by the fact that they can't vote. They think that independent has the possibility that they could go in and vote either way. So that is something that has to be well clarified, number one. And I think we should have open primaries across the USA to give every voter an opportunity to make a choice. It may also help the parties to go out there and appeal to the independent voters to come out and vote for them in a Democratic race or in a Republican race. But not allowing them to not vote is not good, I don't believe, for anybody.
No, I say open it up, Michael. And I've met Congressman Ron DeSantis here in Florida, who's running for governor, and I believe that he will get elected. And I said to him in a private event that if he's elected, that I hope that he can help influence legislatively in the state for us to become an open primary state, because that's a state-based decision. There are many open states around the country, Michael. But I think the count is 36. There are 36 states that are closed. And we want people, right? Ultimately, we want people out to the polls. We want people active and involved. I won't make this so part. I'm going to try to avoid partisanship. I do think that the Blue Party benefits more so than not from lower turnout, but that's a separate issue from whether or not an independent registered voter can or cannot vote in a primary. So as I say, I would support that. If Florida became an open state, I would cheer it. I'd say, great. It's where I want us to be. Same for PA.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, in talking to the people, there are a lot of people out there that would like to go out and vote. They just don't want that party affiliation. Don't ask. I mean, I can't tell anybody how to be this way or that way. But if you're voted independent, I can see the parties wanting to keep it. You know, well, our Democratic voters will make a choice between our Democratic candidates or the Republican candidates. But maybe it's time for a change in America to make sure everybody is working on the same sheet of music. In one respect, I understand that the independents can come out and vote in the primary for different issues, for ballot issues. And that's something that's, you know, if they can do in certain states, just coming out to vote to approve that the city would be able to, if Larkin was on, I would ask him if the city is able to buy new pipes for the gas lines or something, a referendum they put on there. Well, the independents can come out and vote on the questions, but not on the voting for the candidates, which
I've been on since the beginning of the program.
Oh, Larkin, my man. Now, Larkin, you worked at the polls many years. I have not. Can the independents come and vote for the ballot questions?
Yes.
So they can come in, but they cannot vote for the candidates in the primary.
They can't vote for the candidates. Let me make a couple comments here. First of all, if Ron DeSantis gets elected governor, the state of Florida is in deep, deep, deep trouble. Deep trouble. I will work so hard to see that that man never gets elected to any office again. You have no idea. This guy is a complete waste of flesh. Have I made myself perfectly clear? He is awful. You take a look at his congressional voting record. You take a look at all the money that he collected from pharmaceuticals and from all the rest of those pay-hardy fools up in Washington, D.C. And you come back to me and tell me one thing that man did. He's worse than Bill Nelson. Bill Nelson walks around smiling and shaking hands. He's never done anything except collect $4.4 million in salary in the last 15 years. DeSantis is his poster boy. I wouldn't vote for DeSantis to be the garbage man.
Okay,
I
Rich.
Like that, Rich.
No, but I listen, Larkin. I'm not going to object. I don't work for DeSantis' camp. I met him at an event. We're going to have, well, as usual, see, Larkin puts up a good point. The entire country is always looking at Florida. I just love that we're, you know, Larkin, everybody pays attention to us. But you know what?
There,
hey,
Rich.
You guys in PA, Mark, no one cares about you because you guys are hopelessly Democrat. You know, so we just kind of, oh, New York, oh, must be a even your Republicans are Democrats in New York, Mark. We know that. So everyone just pays attention to Florida. So that's fine, Larkin. I'm not paid to defend Congressman DeSantis. That's fine. You can work against him. Absolutely.
He is. I am so surprised that you gave him even an endorsement to run, let alone an ounce of support. This guy is. Oh my God, he is so bad, and he stands no chance of getting reelected in Congress because somebody's going to throw his record in his face. So he thinks he can run for governor and kind of, you know, kind of shy away from having to be reelected to Congress. He's living in a lobbyist house in Washington, D.C. He's living in a lobbyist house in Washington, D.C. He is the biggest sellout that this state has ever sent north. He is huge sellout. And he's a Republican, which just breaks my heart. Besides that, why do we have primaries? We have primaries to support the two-party system. If you don't like the two-party system, eliminate primaries and just have an election. You don't need to have a primary and then a general election.
Yeah, is the primary not only to take, say, if there's five Democrats and five Republicans, is it not only there to take and make the people vote for the best of the five?
It's a chance for every person who has a vote to say who they want representing them in their party, who they want to send to D.C., who is it? So you, what primaries do is they allow you to see and form an opinion as developed by seven candidates as opposed to just one. So it gives you a chance to narrow down the Republican you want and send him to fight the Democrat who they've narrowed down. Unfortunately, in cities like Philadelphia, there's no narrowing. It's a coronation. Even the Republicans get coronated in Philadelphia and not run for primaries. But in most states where they have a good, healthy two-party system, most rural areas where they have a good two-party system, it's a beauty contest. It's a chance for everybody to march across the stage and say, here's what I'm for. It's what we did when we had a choice of talking about Rubio and Bush and Trump and Kasich and the guy from Texas. We looked at all of them, and Trump won. Trump beat him with his ideas and then went on to obviously beat. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
You don't need primaries.
Yes, I see. But you know what? It allows the people to focus. I thought that those television debates at least allowed the people to focus on what they could choose from. I mean, those little primary snippets that you see on the television for half a minute or a minute, they sound good and the person sounds wonderful. But when you see them in an actual debate, that's when you separate the goats from the sheep.
Yeah, but if you're going to eliminate primaries, then you only need one general election. Just have a general election.
Well, I like the primaries because the primaries give the people the opportunity to speak. We've had a number of candidate forums in Philadelphia, and many of the things we're talking about, having three, four candidates going out for the jobs, we're having that now in many districts in Philadelphia. Three, four, even five candidates are running for individual seats. They went to various meetings. They spoke about the American-made issue, the situation of the streets. What are we going to do to fill all of our empty manufacturing facilities, bring them back to life? All the issues that we've been talking about on this radio broadcast is now being discussed at these community meetings. Gives the opportunity for people to go out and say, I like candidate one,
and
two, three, or four.
Then have a general election. There's no sense having a primary if you can cross party lines and vote for whoever you think is, because all you're doing is saying, this is the one I want to be, this is the guy I want to be district attorney right here. It's not, this is the guy I want to run against this Democrat so that we can have open and free debate. It's we don't need primaries if you're going to cross party lines. It's a wasted election.
I see your point, but how many states? Somebody said, now in your area, Mark, in New York, is that an open primary state or is that by party only?
Closed
primary.
Yep.
Okay, that's, you know, I can I can see both sides of the issue.
Yeah.
My part of the issue is we got to get the people focused on the needs of the American people, the bread and butter issues.
A little rude, and I don't mean to be, but it's going to sound rude. We don't need to worry about primaries, and we don't need to worry about general elections. we need to worry about getting anybody in the country excited about anything.
Yeah, that's true. And, I mean, in this situation,
you have a primary election, and 19% of the people show up. What right. the hell's that telling you?
Yeah, that's right. That's why I beg people, when people stop to say something to me and they say, I don't like this and I don't like that, I say, do you vote? No. Well, why not? Well, I'm busy. Some people tell me, oh, we had a casino bus trip that day and we all missed voting. I said, well, that doesn't make sense. You should delay the thing a half an hour. All of you go to your polling places, make your decisions, get on the bus and go to the casino. I mean, there's 1,001 excuses until the people get back to some semblance of normalcy in this country. We're not going to see it. Countries around the world fight to have an election, fight to have a free democratic society, and they can't do it.
So in Pennsylvania, they used to try to promote people to go to the polls by saying the bars can't open until the polls close. Now, you go by Tesseros, and there'd be a line of, 38 guys standing there tapping their foot at 7:30 at night waiting for the poll to close so they could go in and get a drink. But, I don't know what we do to get people to vote. I just don't know. I'm at a complete loss as to what the answer is. It seems to me that if you want to take enough time and energy to complain about the way things are today, why can't you take the time or energy to vote? It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's Australia. They give you an incentive to vote. And in fact, if you don't vote in two elections, you may have to pay like a tax or a tariff.
I think that's wonderful.
I think something like that may help people get motivated if they get a bonus or something because they voted something deduction on whatever, that they are part of the system. We have to do something to get the people out to vote. We're seeing it all over the state of Pennsylvania. The people already have their idea, I'll wait till November and I'll come out. Well, that's very sad. And I'm talking about the people who are registered with the individual parties. You know, gentlemen, this week was a special, very special week because I was out on several events. And I say we've been promoting the Buy American Made campaign for a long time on our broadcast. I've been doing it myself 19 years. And I would say, guys, that our efforts getting people to look at labels and then spend their money accordingly has hit an all-time high.
Absolutely.
I've never seen anything like it. In fact, I was just out the other day. And by the way, I'm very pleased to report some of our greeting card companies, bulb companies, are all coming back to America. I was shocked when I went to buy bulbs the other day that the box said USA. It used to be Mexico.
Really? What type of bulb was that?
It was a Philips bulb. And I thought, wow, it is some. Now, if they do at least 50-50, I mean, then we can't complain because then we know that people are being employed in some level. But when it's 100% coming in, and there's always these packages with 4-5 languages on it, immediately I'm shaky when I go near it. But this one was from the Philips company. It had the 4-5 languages, but then when I looked at it, made in the USA, I was very pleased.
Oh, very good. Guys, I got a little story. It reminded me of Larkin last night. I was looking for a dryer for the house. And Larkin, I had to go out. Of course, I go to Sears, and both of them were closed. You know, people don't realize what's going on with Sears, and it's a shame because a lot of people live in Sears houses and the history of Sears. But I went to Lowe's, and Larkin, I remember you shopping. And, of course, LG was South Korea. And it came down to Maytag or Whirlpool. And I think, Larkin, you had a similar story back, when. But Maytag was a 10-year warranty, and it's designed and assembled in the United States. It had an America sticker on it. I picked on the guy, Mike, you would have been proud, and I got another customer into it. But long and short, I get home with this dryer and I hook it up. Of course, the gas line's on the opposite side. Got to cut this ductwork. Murphy was against me, but get it running, and it sounded as bad as the old one, you know. And I'm thinking, you know, the quality, though, they're so thin compared to years ago when my father had them. And, but Maytag was the better of the choices available. I talked to the guy at Lowe's. When we talk about Sears going down and a lot of our appliance centers that closed around us in the last months and Sears leaving our local malls, Lowe's, I'm not sure if you got Lowe's, you know, Mike in Philadelphia or Rich and Larkin in Florida, but, you know, Lowe's is like a Home Depot type store, and they just took on the Craftsman tool line from Sears. Yep. So I think Sears is in that spiral out of control going out, and that's a shame, you know, because Sears at one point was everything to everybody. But a lot of change going on, but these appliances, talking to the guy, they are trying. I've seen stickers on them, like it was a breath of fresh air. They're moving in the right direction. They knew at least to advertise and tell people where it's built, where it's designed, where it's assembled. So I appreciated that.
That was very well. It was good to see. It cheers me up. Everywhere I go, every package I pick up, I do, you know, observe exactly what, and I'm seeing more American flags or red, white, and blue streamers to bring your attention to the fact that it is American made. Why couldn't this have been done years and years ago? We've been promoting this kind of effort for a couple of years, and now people are saying, yeah, I'm really getting into it. Michael, I never thought anything would happen. Some people said, Michael, it's not going to change. People don't care. But when you lose your job, your family loses its job, they lose their livelihood, they begin to care, and then they begin to take inventory. What happened to all of this? Why are we in this situation? And that's why when they talk about all these agreements, whether it's Iran, or I want to see the full text of it. And then I want to see the full text and then a synopsis. Because too many deals have been made over the last 30 years. Many of them, we didn't know what was happening. All of a sudden, they voted on a national level, and we were stuck with the policy. I think what's happening in the last year or two is going to make sure that we don't experience this in the future, that the American people finally have an opinion.
So to add to that a little bit, I'll tell you, Macron, France is not one of my favorite places in the world, but I like this Macron guy. He comes over and visits Trump. They have a great friendship. They have a bromance of some sort going on. And they seem to agree on everything except the Iranian deal. And Trump holds to his beliefs and says, we're out. We just we don't believe that this is a fair deal. We're out. And France and England and Germany and all of them call Trump to try to change his mind. Well, guess why France wants to change his mind?
They're making things in the country.
The French exports into Iran, right. Hence this deal went into place, are up 60%
right.
To over $1.7 billion.
Right, wow. Right. That's how it works.
So why does France want to stay in the deal? And I could just hear Macron going, well, it doesn't really have to do with the fact that we import. And I can hear Trump going, yeah, tell somebody else that.
Well, you know what, Larkin, you're right.
I'm concentrating on the issue, on the question about the nuclear, you know, building the nuclear bombs and whatnot. I mean, that's the focus, right?
Right.
Well, there were some threats made yesterday after it was announced that he was going to go against, he was going to start enriching his uranium and all. Look, we cannot be disciplinarians for the world. Our people are hurting in America. They've been hurting. Even though unemployment is down, we still have an enormous amount of people that have not been in the workforce for a number of years. And all you need to do to receive proof of that is go to the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the debt clock. It goes right to the statistics that are prepared by the United States government and the Census Bureau. We have 90 million plus people not in the workforce. The unemployment statistics only talk about those people who have been in the workforce in the last 2 years. How about those that left the workforce? How about the mothers that were raising their children till they got into school and need a fuller part-time job? How are we going to get all of those people back into industries, offices, research and development? That's the big question. Rich, how would you answer it?
Well, so a couple things, Michael, and based on Larkin, what Larkin is saying, that the entire Iran deal was sold as a way to prevent the Islamic Republic of Iran from getting a nuclear weapon, and it was sold as being effective to do that. Now, if you fast forward just up until the last few weeks, and you've seen these reports coming out, the Boston Globe was the first to report it, that John Kerry, who's no longer in any official government capacity, was attempting to, behind the scenes, salvage this deal. And, you know, the word treason, Michael, is not a word that should be thrown around lightly. But what John Kerry has attempted to do is really approaching that line. John Kerry is not in any official government capacity anymore. And one of the consequences of losing when your party loses an election is that the next guy comes in, which is undoubtedly what Trump told Macron in France. The next guy comes in and says, well, the last guy's not here anymore. And it was absolutely the right thing. It was absolutely the right thing to say, look, this deal sucks. And we're gonna go back to the table to get something that we think is more realistically going to work and achieve what its stated objectives were. This does not do that. And so the American people, Michael, do not want the United States meddling any more than we need to in the Middle East, or anywhere for that matter, but especially the Middle East, when we have enough meddling to do here within our own borders.
You're right, Richard. I want to ask you a question. Did you know what was in that deal when it was signed?
I'm not going to tell you guys that I read every single syllable, but I actually do know quite a bit what was in it from a family friend who used to actually be in American intelligence. And one of the requirements in there is that the United States and allies would give Iran a month's notice before coming in to check wherever the sites are where nuclear weapons could be built. So I don't know what's a good analogy. I mean, if I said to Mark, hey Mark, listen, if you're breaking the law, I'm going to give you 30 days notice before I show up at your door or your home, right? I mean, that's just, does that really make any sense to give someone? The entire deal was premised on Iran cannot get a nuclear weapon, and then in the same deal we say, but we're going to give you a month's notice before we show up. Does that really make any sense? I mean, that doesn't really make a lot of sense to me.
No, okay. But the thing that bugged me about the whole deal was receiving billions of dollars in cash. Am I right?
Yeah. Nobody talks about that, Mike.
Yeah, but the thing is that the money, why do you don't buy friendship from anyone. You should
not. Well, let me mention about the money, Michael, because the money went to Iran because of sanctions that had been in place for decades. John Kerry, as the Secretary of State, it said publicly that undoubtedly some percentage of that money would make its way into the hands of terrorists because of the amount of money and the structure. So John Kerry himself said that. So let's be fair on this point. It's how you view the world, Michael. If you view the world through let's make love, not war, let's get high, free stuff, hug a terrorist, then you think that it's not our intent to give money to the terrorists. Like Kerry probably didn't intend for money to go there, but he said openly that money is going to make its way into the hands of terrorists but we're just going to give it, we're going to go and give it anyway. And that's the difference between having a view of the world that there are parts of the world that are in fact dangerous, and have an aspect in those countries that truly want to cause harm to Americans. There's that, or there's the, you know, there's the Obama foreign policy, which is that, you know, Iran will be our friends because I said so. If I say so, they'll be our friends, just like I'll go do the wave at a baseball game with a murdering dictator down in Cuba. So it's all a question of how you view it. And I want to just make this point, guys. Last point, sorry. Now, Larkin may disagree with this statement. Let me preface by saying this. But I have to tell you guys, I don't think, and let me preface by saying I'm not a historian, I don't think in American history there have ever been successive presidents more polar opposite than Obama and Trump. I don't even think, Larkin, that Jimmy Carter and Reagan were as polar opposite as Obama and Trump. I mean, even Jimmy Carter, Michael, said, we're going to put it, Jimmy Carter said, imagine a Democratic president said about Iran at the time, we're going to put a moratorium on temporarily on Iranians immigrating into America. Jimmy Carter said that. Today, you have Democrat congressmen walking around America with T-shirts that say, I don't believe in borders. That's a true story. Yeah. True story, Mark. Keith Ellison, the guy who's in the DNC and he's a Minnesota congressman, was walking around with a shirt recently, said, I don't believe in borders. I don't think there have ever been successive presidents more polar opposite. Let me tell you guys, Bush and Obama were not as polar opposite as supporters may have you believe. They were different, but not polar opposites. Obama and Trump, Michael, I mean, you talk about, I mean, this is as diametrically opposite, in my opinion, as you can get. And that's the result of, you know, Bush created Obama, and Bush and Obama created Trump. And what did Trump run on? He said, you know what, this deal, I think we're going to rip it up. I'm sure the president, I mean, I hope the president listened to all sides. I think that he did. And at the end of it all said, you know what? I believed as a candidate it was a wrong deal. And now as a president, I believe it's a wrong deal. And it was. And it is, Michael. And that's why it needs to be renegotiated, because the entire premise of the deal was we need to keep this country from getting a nuclear weapon. Oh, but by the way, we're going to give them over $1 billion and give them a month's notice.
Mark, how much exactly was the dollar amount given?
Well, from us, it was $1 billion, but there was many other billions of dollars because there were also European sanctions that had been in place.
Well, I'd like to see all the dollars that are being focused on this, put back into our school system to restore some of those trade programs, to get our boys and girls knowledgeable of what they want to be in the future. There's too much effort placed upon other nations of the world that are needing to be bought to be our friends, and I don't think that's good. I think that I don't know much about the Iranian deal, but I think that it needed to be put on a hold. I think the American people now, from what I've been hearing in the last day, they want to know exactly what was in that agreement and why did we have to show up with all that cash.
And just as an aside to what you just said, Michael, I'm awfully sorry. Nobody heard me when I tried to break in. But I would have asked the good congressman, what's his strategy? I mean, obviously Ryan didn't want to do this because it was either a labor issue or there was something else in the bill he didn't like. But I would love to have known, what's his strategy? I mean, are you going to try again this session? Are you going to wait until the fall? But we didn't ask him that, and that's unfortunate because.
I'll try to get him back on. Brendan's been on various broadcasts, and he's very knowledgeable, and he's very upfront about what he believes in, what he's trying to do. He's very sincere with people, that I like a lot, and he does get back to you, which is very, very important.
The guy in Congress.
Is he what?
The youngest.
He's pretty young. He's pretty young. I don't know exactly how old he is, but it's not very old. He's only been in there a few years. He did serve a few years in the Pennsylvania state legislature,
And his brother got elected a senator from Pennsylvania.
No, he's still in the House of Representatives, his brother.
Of the state of Pennsylvania, not the federal.
Yes, yes. He's a representative in the House of in Pennsylvania. So, I mean, we're going to see a lot of things changing. I have a lot of good things that go on with both sides of the aisle. I like to give everybody a little bit of time, and I'd like the people to know what's going on, because I want them to vote. I don't want them to be strangled, that they're going to be pushed this way and that way. I know myself going to the polls and going around on visitations, some of the people say, oh, I hate to go because they come right over and they run and vote for this one, vote for that one. And then they find out I'm from the other party and, oh, you know, they drop you like a hot potato. But this Tuesday is primary election day in the state of Pennsylvania. Is it your election day down there in Florida too, Larkin?
I'm not sure. No, ours isn't until June. Is it?
June, right, okay. Well, in Pennsylvania, it's our primary day, and I encourage all voters to look at all of the information that you received in the mail from the people who are seeking to be elected from your individual districts, your congressmen, and please go out and vote, because the voice of the people must be heard. Our voices have been heard. I think we've done an enormously good job promoting the Buy American Made campaign. I can't thank you more than I can, because Larkin, Rich, Mark, Henry, everybody involved, all of our guests, Curtis and Beth Allen, one after the other, I get a lot of compliments from people. And today I will also be sending a copy of today's broadcast out, and I'll ask that you send it around, because that's how we get more and more people thinking about the importance of American made. We're talking about bread and butter issues. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hate to say it, but it's always time to say goodbye at this time. Thank you, Larkin Connolly, and thank you, Rich Loges and Mark Andel. Thank you for everything that you do. Henry will be getting that rebroadcast up on the internet in an hour or so. And if you see me in my travels, you see me out during the election, during the polls, make sure you let me know that you tune into the program. We appreciate you. Please go out and buy American made, and make sure you let everybody know that you're looking at labels because you want to help American workers. Have a great one, guys.
Have a great week, guys. Thanks, Mike.
Hey, Church, I hope I didn't hurt your feelings.